This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. And the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, and durable details, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code CLASSIC24.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
Bedrosian throws to Sandberg and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over! 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
All right, it is Thompson to Clark here on election night. And, you know, I told someone the other day, I said, let's take it back to the old school. Let's take it back to the 90s. Just rock the vote.
Remember rock the vote? Yeah. Randy, what was it? MTV Randy of the Redwoods.
Right? rock the vote. Man. Yeah. Those are some interesting times.
That's right.
We are also in interesting times, but we are not here to talk about the election. However, if you are using our live show here, as a break from the madness, we appreciate you. We welcome you. And if you were listening on the audio on Wednesday, hopefully some of the madness is gone, though probably not. And you get to enjoy listening to Giants baseball instead of constant election talk. We welcome you as well. So hopefully our plan here is to not go too long because I know people are itching to go watch things and think about things. So hopefully we'll get some of this stuff out of here pretty quickly. But there was a lot to talk about in Giants baseball since the last time that Brad and I recorded. We were lamenting about how, hey, Buster, it's the off season and we don't have a GM yet. And they went and signed a GM.
That's awesome. And for me, that like signaled the beginning of the offseason. Mm-hmm. So that's why I just didn't feel like, all right, we're in the World Series, this and that, but our team is in flux. Like we got Buster Posey as the head of baseball ops. And then, but we need that GM. We need to start trickling down. I want to hear our plan. I want to hear our ideas. And sure enough, as we're going to go into in a bit, as soon as they plugged in our guy at GM, started getting some words out of Buster at the GM meetings of like,
yes,
some direction of this team. Like, what is this team going to do? And not necessarily words, but actions, which is really cool.
Okay. So we might as well start off with it. So the Giants signed Zach Manasian. Is that how they're pronouncing it?
I believe it's Manasian.
Manasian. Okay. I've seen him on a couple of different things. I've seen him interviewed, and he comes from the Giants team. He's been with the team since Farhan brought him in. So he's been with the team now for 5 years, has a long historied career, was with the Brewers, kind of came into the game. Tommy Lasorda was a godfather of some sort. So he's that was kind of the thing where I'm like, we got rid of someone from the Dodgers brass and we're bringing in someone else who's a little close to the Dodgers. Oh, well, so be it. He's been with the Giants for a while now. But this was not someone who was on our radar. And according to Buster Posey, he was not even on Buster's radar. So that was kind of interesting in bringing him in like that. And you know, I guess the way that he told the story, Buster just was like, hey, do you want to interview for this thing? And he's like, yeah, of course. So it's kind of weird in the process of the whole thing.
He wanted the job, but he didn't, you know, Buster didn't know he wanted the job, but that's good. Hey, you know what? I like a search that goes outside the box, because if you start and you have, we have five candidates and these are the five candidates we're going with. Yeah, you're not going to get the person who's going to be the best fit in the long run. And you get somebody who steps up and says, yeah, how about me? I think I can do the job. So kind of a cool step forward there. But yeah, I mean, you know, looking at his history and his scouting, his pro scouting history and everything else that he's been through, I you know, this is kind of the move that we thought was going to happen. We were going to get a scout. That's what he said. That's what Buster said. He wanted a scout heavy GM. And that's kind of the direction that they're going now. So I'm excited. Let's go. His brother works for the Angels as the GM. So Trout, we can get Trout. No problem. Right. Just call him up and say, hey, remember that noogie you gave me when we were in sixth grade? Yeah. That noogie. Okay. You owe me Mike Trout. Right. Not how it works.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I do have some insight from somebody in baseball who's more from an analytical lens. They said, when I just asked them like their thoughts, and they said, they hired a good eye scout who wasn't really a candidate for that type of job outside of their organization. So, like you kind of said, out of the box, but kind of fits what Buster wanted. And we'll talk a little bit about what Buster may want even more when it comes to the loss of a couple other people. But then he said, you know, when I kind of asked him further, he said, if things go well, it's always a possibility for, and because my question was around, you know, why would you want to be Buster's number two? And you know, because if the Giants do well, Buster's going to get the credit. And if the Giants don't do well, you may get a lot of the blame. And he said, if things go well, it's also always a possibility, but not a lot of teams are looking to hire GMs or presidents of baseball operations with old school scouting backgrounds anymore. So to me, a lot of sports can be copycat leagues, right? Copycat organizations. And it sounds like the Giants are definitely going a little bit backward from how other organizations are going. And if it works, then maybe you create a trend. But it definitely sounds like they are going against the modern grain here, which you never want to be behind in the times. But sometimes I think we believe that maybe the analytical side of the game is a little too heavy. And we saw that last year. We actually liked the way that they played last year better than the year before when they were so heavy analytics. And I think Farhan allowed Bob Melvin to do more things that were maybe against even what he thought that Bob Melvin should have done. So I understand that. Now, I guess the question is here, and this is based off of the news today, from the that you were talking about, and I'll pull up Andrew Baggerly's tweet here because he had a couple of good tweets based off of Buster's quote. So Buster, he stressed analytics, and he said that they will continue to inform decisions, but the offices will be moved from the place of prominence, which was in the clubhouse, which we heard about how all the computers had sort of taken over the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And they were moved out of the clubhouse. Then he also said that Michael Schwartz is the name, who had been with the Giants around the same time as Manasian was the he was the director of baseball analytics. He left to the Atlanta Braves with Pete Petilla. So that's where Pete went. That's where the head of analytics went. And now the Giants are without one, and they are also needing to backfill for Zach's previous role in scouting. So they still have a lot of work to do. Now, does it feel to you a little bit like they're zagging sort of hard here in Buster's first month on the job?
You know, I don't think so. Kind of the way I was thinking about it today, because I thought, man, there, you know, a lot of changes. Your head analytics guy is gone. you're moving, like you said, you're moving the entire office back out of the clubhouse for analytics. Buster did say in his initial presser, hey, look, we're still going to mix the two. But it just kind of feels like, you know, the way Farhan had done things really analytic heavy with him and Kapler when he first came in and doing what they did to the clubhouse. It kind of feels like, you know, some of that was accepted because I kind of feel like what the Giants are doing now, what Buster Posey is doing now is saying, look, we're going to kind of mix the two, absolutely. But I think we're going to go a little bit, instead of, you know, a 60-40 on analytics, maybe we're going to go a 60-40 on, you know, old school baseball feel. I don't know what to call it because it never really had a name, right? When we were growing up.
Yeah, in-person scouting. Now there's another, like, people are reading between the lines. And I'm not even... You know, I don't even read a lot of heavy analytics stuff, but all analysis today has an analytical slant to it just because that's where the game is. But I was reading McCovey Chronicles, and I believe the author is Brian Murphy, and he was just saying how some of the words that Buster was saying, such as, you know, the type of players that they are going to get have to sort of fit this mold, this Buster mold, right? When you do that, you do exclude talented players and talented players who may be able to fit. Like, I'm just going to use Jock Peterson for just because he was on the team. There were some things that I'm sure Giants fans liked about him and some things that Giants fans didn't. But let's say that Jock, I don't know, let's say he bothered some people. Would he fit a certain Buster mold? And if not, then are we saying, okay, we cannot sign a Jock type when, as we know, Jock was very beneficial to this team in portions of his career. Does he fit the, you know, run hard to first base and break up two and play smart up the middle and all of these things that Buster wants the team to be? Though I will say, you know, obviously the guy was on those teams, the 10, 12, and 14. But if you look back at that 2010 team, was that the most, like, fundamentally elite baseball team that you had ever watched? Like, not really. There were some pieces that fit together well, but like, if you were to build a baseball team from scratch, I don't think the 2010 team is necessarily the blueprint to how you want to put the team together.
No. And I feel like the 2010 team was a lightning strikes team because you had the pitching, right? And the pitching, just the young pitching, gelled all at the same time. So that was 2010. And then you got a bunch of guys. I mean, we're talking Edgar Renteria and Juan Uribe. No, I mean, that's, you know what I mean? These are, like, not far off of Jock Peterson type of players without the massive power.
Yeah.
But you had guys like that, but they didn't strike out a ton. They put the ball in play, that team. And they scored just enough runs to help with, you know, the stellar Giants pitching and the good bullpen and Brian Wilson on the back end. I mean, there's a reason, you know, Kiper coined that team torture. I mean, it wasn't a fundamentally perfectly sound baseball team. But again, Buster Posey was in the clubhouse, so he knows the characters in there. He knows the players that were in there. I think, going back to Jock Peterson, I think he fits a Buster Posey team mold way better than a Farhan Kapler team mold. Because I think with Kapler and Farhan, I think a lot of it was analytics, and maybe it was a touch robotic to the point where you had guys in the clubhouse like Jock Peterson who were just kind of doing their own thing and doing what they wanted to do. But they knew that, hey, when we call upon him to, you know, to line shift into the game in the seventh inning or the sixth inning and get at bats the rest of the game, he was going to be ready for that. We don't really care what goes on in the clubhouse. We just need him to perform to the numbers that we have right here in this book or on this iPad. I think a Jock Peterson personality, a Jock Peterson type of hitter, I think it fits a Buster Posey team more. Yeah, I know the team wants to go towards more breaking up double plays and stealing bases and playing great, but
taking it back to 86, man.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but you're not gonna get that 1-9, right? No. You gotta have a guy who could put it in the cove, late in the ball game. So I think, and he's gonna keep it loose too. He liked to have fun. He was a fun baseball player. So, yeah, I think he fits more on a team like this. But again, you got to have a mix. And I think what Buster Posey is looking for this team is a mix, but heavy on the, Tyler Fitzgerald at second, a Willy Adames at short, a Gold Glover at third, a Gold Glover behind the dish, a first baseman who can mash the ball. So you're going to have that mix. Like, that's a 1986 team, right? That's a 1987 team is what you're looking at. That's a Minnesota Twins team. So,
all right, Davis had a great point, and I should have thought of it since we do cover the Niners on this. And the Niners podcast that we do is called We Want Winners, which is based off of this person. Davis comments, sounds like Buster's borrowing a page from Mike Singletary era. Back in the day, this worked. We're bringing it back. Now, I will say, if he's going to go back like Mike Singletary went back, that would be bad news, because what Mike Singletary did was he was like, hey guys, it's 2008. And what we're going to do is we are going to try and go back to the late 70s era of the NFL. And we think we can do it. And in some instances, I think that sort of toughness style did work because they had certain players like that. But on the offensive side of the football, it was putrid. It was really, really bad. So I think this here's what I'm kind of worried about, which is baseball today is really about winning the matchup based off of your percentages and based off of your leverage. You know, we watched in the World Series, the way that the Dodgers play is, they have a favorable matchup offensively more often than not. And it's about what pitcher can actually win that matchup 1-9. And not very many people can. Gerrit Cole did a really good job until, he had to be pulled out of game 5. But you don't have a lot of Gerrit Coles. And so my worry is offensively is like, well, we're going to roll these players out. And the other team, goes, we know exactly how to pitch these guys. Like, I don't care if Casey Schmidt is playing platinum glove level defense at third. We know by watching him over the last 2 years that he's going to swing at half of the pitches out of the strike zone. He's going to get himself out half of the time. And then someone's going to throw get me over fastball, and he's going to drill that one out of the park. But what happens is the way that these guys are being pitched to is they're being pitched to their weakness constantly. And if the pitcher can actually hit those spots and they can get to that weakness, more often than not, they're going to get those guys out. So if we are continuing to utilize the numbers in the right way, I don't think Buster's going to put out these bad lineups. But my worry is he's just like going to gut check it. He's going to be like, well, we haven't given this guy a chance, and thus he's going to play today. And you and I are like, but this guy's like 0-for-12 with 11 strikeouts against this pitcher. What is he doing in the lineup? And that's the kind of thing I worry about a little bit. Now, that's just me being a fan. I'm going to give Buster and Bob Melvin the benefit of the doubt of they're still gonna play by the right blueprint. But are they gonna have the right players to fit some of those roles based off of this old school mentality of how to put a baseball team together? I don't, that's part I don't know. What would be great is if Bruce Bochy could retire, and then we can just have Buster and Bob just have him on, you know, FaceTime constantly.
Yeah, right.
Like, hey, Bruce, like, what do you think about this? What do you think? Because if anybody had a gut that worked well in all facets of the game, it was Bochy. Bochy was not going to overlook something that said, hey, this guy, I know you believe in this guy, but it's not going to be his day. But at the same time, you know, with the bullpen, oh, Romo throwing 86 mile an hour sliders, frisbee sliders, he's going to get this guy out. I feel it. And so,
yeah,
that's tough in this day and age when you have a lineup like the Dodgers, who the Giants are going to play. They're going to play the Padres a lot. The Diamondbacks came back later in the season. I just don't want the Giants to fall behind to where they go, whoops, that was 2 years, and now we got to go back to what we were doing. Because honestly, I think most Giants fans could live with what was happening on the field these last 2 years if the farm system looked like it was actually going to produce. But you put both of those things together, the staleness of the everyday team and the fact that they were not actually producing, you know, Luciano and Matos, two big league level stardom. I think that was probably what got their wits end. I'm hopeful. I am faithful, but I am really worried at some of the first things that he did. It was almost like, you know, I really worry about the overreaction. Let's undo all of this because I don't like it, or it didn't work, or you have any sort of justifiable reason. You know, our head of analytics is gone. Our GM, who we wanted to keep around, he's now gone. And I'm guessing those guys saw where things were going and they were like, oh, this is not the best place for me. So we're going to gauge this week by week, and we'll measure Buster for all of the things that he's doing. And he's going to get a good run. Fans are going to give him an opportunity. And this is part of that restart. This is why you bring him in, is because the fans are giving him the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I am a little worried based off of some of the moves, including the ones today.
The only reason I'm not too worried about it is because, and I did get the pronunciation wrong. It is Manassian.
Manassian.
Yeah. So Zach Manassian. The reason I'm not too worried about that is because he's been in the organization. He was a Zadie hire. So, mm-hmm. He knew how that whole thing worked and the analytics side of things and how to scout and who to scout for when you're talking about analytics. But you know, the quote I saw, and I think it was from that same McCovey Chronicles article, was basically, it kind of sounds like the Giants are going more towards a scout first, check later type of approach, where they're scouting somebody by basically raw talent, watching, seeing what they do, and then let's look at the numbers and see if those numbers match up with what our eyes are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of numbers first, with this guy, I'm looking at him, he's not performing like that, but let's get him in here because his numbers back all of that up. That, and again, I think that makes me as an old school fan a little more comfortable, actually. Mm-hmm. Because if I see a guy is crushing the baseball, but his numbers say, yeah, maybe he doesn't maintain this. Hey, you know what? That guy's crushing the baseball. Put him out there and let him hit the baseball. Because what grows your skills probably more than anything is repetition and confidence. So if you're constantly being told, but the iPad says this, you can't maintain this, so we're not going to put you back out there, until we can work you on the side and get you better at this and this and that, that could be soul crushing. That could hurt the guys who are, you know, I don't know. I hate to say it, but like a Luciano and a Matos. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe that not given the chance to just go out there and play every day kind of hurt them. But we saw what they did in AAA. They were kind of back and forth in AAA as well. But I'm fine with that in that side. And then again, not having We also don't have a hitting coach. You know, he left for Texas. So,
and the other one is interviewing for jobs as well. So,
yeah, but they're talking possibly Damon Minor as the hitting coach, who's been in the organization, knows the organization. He's been in Sacramento for a few years, and so he comes to San Francisco, and he's familiar with half the roster because half the roster was in Sacramento over the last couple of seasons. So,
you know what he's also familiar with?
Yeah.
Being a quadruple A player.
He is. I got to go back through my tapes. I'm pretty sure I interviewed him post game a couple times in San Jose when he was having that like 36, 37 home run season. I mean, it wasn't, that guy was just, I'm like, why is he in single A hitting 37 home runs?
Yeah.
Little did I know.
Well, why. I mean, he was a beast. He was a minor league beast. He absolutely was.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's stamps.com/program.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's switch some gears because we do have to celebrate a couple of guys. Matt Chapman and Patrick Bailey, you mentioned it already. They are Gold Glovers.
I spoiled it. I'm sorry.
No. It's totally fine because that's part of the argument for what Buster wants to do is, play solid defense and pitching and hope that the hitting could be good enough. But the Platinum Glove, you looked up how this works. How does the Platinum Glove work?
So the Platinum Glove is given to whoever won the Gold Glove for that position in that league, you are now eligible for the Platinum Glove. So they give a Platinum Glove every year to the overall best defender in the National League, the overall best defender in the American League. I thought at the end of the Gold Glove Awards, they just give it, but apparently now you vote for it. which I don't like, because then it's going to become a popularity contest. When you look at the Platinum Glove winner in the National League, they started doing this in 2011. It's gone to, and this is why I'm really hoping Patrick Bailey can take it home, because he did have the best numbers overall in fielding just in general for pretty much any player in the majors, but especially in the National League. But Yadier Molina won it the initial year it started, 2011. Since then, he won it 2011, 12, 14, and 15. So he's a four-time winner catcher. The overall all-time National League winner is Nolan Arenado, who won it from 2017 all the way to 2022. So he was the Platinum Glove Award winner 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years in a row. Over in the American League, it's been kind of mixed, but Matt Chapman did win it 2 years, 2018 and 19, when he was in Oakland. But more recently, last year, Andrés Giménez won it for Cleveland in the American League, and Fernando Tatis for San Diego in the National League. Winners are going to be announced on November 8th at the Gold Glove Dinner in New York. So there's that. We didn't get our invite for that.
And that would be a fun dinner to attend.
That'd be awesome, man. That's probably a pretty cool gig. I'm sure it's at a super fancy place.
Imagine you're invited to this Gold Glove dinner and you walk through the door and they throw you a short hop. And if you let it go by you, you got to leave.
Now you're not eligible for the Platinum Glove. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, how do you fill the short hop? Oh, you're not really a Gold Glover. Get out of here.
Yeah, if you're Patrick Bailey, you got to throw somebody out from your knees.
Yeah. All right. I had another thought, and this is because I was reading a piece, and we'll circle back to this a couple of times. Tim Britton from The Athletic, he wrote a piece, and he basically predicted the salaries or what the biggest free agents would sign for, and he made these projections before I think it was somewhere in the beginning of the fall, September, and now he's looking at these projections again post World Series. And so, for instance, he projected Juan Soto to be 12 for 540 in September. And then based off of the playoffs, he's thinking more 13 for 611 is the number. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I was looking at some of the pitchers, because the Giants may be in contention for one of these starting pitchers that's available. And like, you have folks like Corbin Burnes, whose projection is 7 years, $217 million by Britton. Then you have other guys like Fried, who's right now 5 for $140 is the projection. And then I got to Blake Snell, and I looked at Blake Snell, and I was like, oh, the projection for Blake Snell, according to Tim Britton, is 4 for $110 million. That is not much more than what the Giants paid him last year. And 4 years does not seem like an eternity compared to like a 7-year deal for Burnes. And so I was anti Snell, and I will admit some of it was because of how he ended the season and decided not to pitch that one last game. I was like, oh God, what a selfish guy. Right. But at 4 for $110 million, I kind of feel like they should be back in the ballgame. Now, that could be also wrong. He could be getting way more than that.
I think he's going to get way more than that.
But 4 for $110 million, I feel like the Giants should be right in the mix on that.
Yeah, what was Burnes?
7 for $217 million or something like that?
Yeah. Yes. No. I mean, Burnes is great. Snell is great. How old is Burnes?
Burnes is, I believe he is 2 years younger than Snell.
Okay. And so Snell's probably going to get closer to, oh man, I can't see him getting 4 for $110 million. He's going to be wanting 5 years, I'm sure, and somebody's going to pitch in a sixth, I'll bet. I mean, so 6 years.
Yeah, that's where you get the competition in driving up the price. But as we saw last year, that competition was not driving up the price the way that they wanted. And so then they had to take a 2-year deal or a 1-1 deal with the Giants.
Yeah, six years at 30 probably.
So 6 for $180.
Yeah, I think that's closer to what you're going to see.
And it's not like there are bargain arms out there to where the Giants are going to be able to save a ton of money and still get a ton of value. Like Sean Manea, who we've had, he's 33 years old, and the projection is still here, 4 for $76. Yusei Kikuchi. Yusei Kikuchi is 34 years old. His projection, 3 for $63. So he's still projected to make $20 million. So that was more my point, which is if the average price for Blake is kind of in the low 30s still, and it's only for 4 years, I was like, man, Giants should probably be in the mix on that. Though by them being in the mix probably does jack it up to 5 or jacks it up even higher.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, maybe that's a starting negotiation point, but Boris is going to come in and go, ha, ha, ha. Look at what Burns is projected to get and Blake Snell, the way he finished the second half last year. And then you got to look at, you know, I'm sure we're going to talk about him too a little bit more, but Robbie Ray, you got to look at him and say, now we've got him for $25 million a year. Is that a bargain? Because you've got a guy, he's coming off Tommy John. First game, first start last year, struck out, what, like 9? I mean, he was nasty. And so if you look at the upside of what you get from a former Cy Young Award winner, $25 million a year, when you're looking at, you said Kikuchi at $20 million a year, and you're getting Robbie Ray at $25 million a year, I mean, that's kind of bargain. I don't know if Robbie Ray could have gotten $25 million a year anywhere else, but now that I see the predictions for Kikuchi, it's like, why couldn't he have?
I think for Robbie Ray, it was probably more along the lines of, I could get 2 for $50 easily, but could I get 4 for $100? Probably not. I might as well stay where I'm at. And obviously the worry with him is him breaking down, but
sure.
I don't know, man. I feel like shouldn't those tight pants just be absolute compression? Isn't compression supposed to be good for us as we get older?
Yeah.
I'm wearing compression knee braces right now doing the podcast because I...
Doing the pod? You're sitting down.
Because I wore them on my walk and I'm just like, you know what? These just make my knees feel better. I'm just going to keep wearing them.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's one of those situations where... I mean, if for some reason Blake Snell was gettable at 4 for $110, I mean, you'd come in and you'd be Buster Posey and you walk into the room and go, man, that's a lot, but I guess we'll do it. You know, play it up a little bit because, gosh, 4 for $110 for... Because that's the other thing, too, is you don't want Blake Snell... I don't want Blake Snell for more than 4 more years.
Yeah.
I mean, 4 more years is pushing it, right?
Yeah, I mean, with his, you know? With his injury history, there's going to be a year or two where you're not going to get the full Snell. I mean, we saw it last year. You didn't get the full Snell, but then the Snell that you got was so tantalizing. You're like, man, this guy's actually a really good player.
Yeah. Should they rename the Cy Young Award to the full Snell?
Yeah.
I think that sounds better.
Second half Snell is like the best pitcher in all of baseball.
A full Snell.
If you could get a full Snell, you're talking about Roger Clemens, 1986.
There you go, man. What was he in 1986? Wasn't he like 26-2 or something like that?
Yeah, crazy. 24-5, something like that. That was insane. And that was coming off of, for us at least, Dwight Gooden's 1985, which was the same thing where these pitchers were just coming out of the woodwork. All right, before we get to our we're going to play a game here at the end.
He was 24-4. Sorry, I had to look it up. That's one of those years that sticks in my head. You say 1986 Roger Clemens, and I go, that was like one of the greatest pitching years ever that I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Susan Slusser today tweeted out that there are a few teams expressing interest in Camilo Duvall. The talent remains undeniable, and a few teams would consider him for closer role, which he lost to Ryan Walker last year. Ryan Walker, very dependable closer, kind of a journeyman himself, doesn't have the dynamite in his right arm like Camilo does, but he does have stuff. He's got great stuff.
This is nasty stuff.
Yeah. The upside of Duvall is what, like, I'll compare Duvall to a Warriors player. We had the 49er crossover earlier. We'll have the Warriors crossover here. The Warriors have a young player by the name of Jonathan Kuminga. Now, Brian and my other son, JJ, and me too, like, we're just like, oh, just in due time. Like, let's just, this guy was, he was a rookie when the Warriors won the championship, and he's just like kind of the, he's just waiting to burst out. But here we are in year four for Kuminga, and he's still slowly getting better, but he hasn't like taken that leap. And I sort of feel the same way about Duvall. Now, Duvall had a really, really good year 2 years ago, made the All-Star team. Remember the him and Julio Rodriguez and that awesome at bat? Yeah. And there were moments where you're like, Duvall may be at some point one of the best closers in the game. And then we took the step back last year. There was some attitude stuff. There was some, you know, Kruko was really hard on him as far as, you know, doing whatever it took to be the best. And he came back and he pitched well, but he did lose his starting spot. And now we're talking about what is he going to get in arbitration? And now he gets more expensive. He's no longer just the $300,000 guy. He's going to make some real money coming up here. And so what do you think about the rumors of Duvall? I would love to see him on the team because just because you have that high upside, like just like I want to see Kuminga continue to be on the Warriors. But at the same time, you have to be realistic in what you have seen and go, okay, it is quite possible that we've seen the best of him. Now, there's also possible that he could do better, but he may not. So what's the realistic viewpoint? So what are your thoughts on Camilo?
You know, that's a tough one too, because I go back and forth. It's, I mean, if you're playing a video game and you're paying $2.9 million to him to be on your team, I think you just go, yeah, I'm going to take that because he's a guy that we can throw out there. You know, he's a guy I can use in the bullpen. He throws, you know, whatever. He's got this nasty cutter. He throws 100 miles an hour, some great pitches. But in the real world, you look at that and you go, $2.9 million, 27 years old, still got a lot of young guys in AAA. Bullpen is starting to mesh again. 27 years old, $2.9 million, first year of arbitration. My only concern and the only thing I think about is his head and his head space and where he's at. Is he going to be ruined if he comes back and is not the closer and his role is an eighth inning setup man? But again, an eighth inning setup man for $2.9 million. Again, he gets the outs, but he also walks a lot of people. So I think it's a matter of what I want to see some spring training action out of him. Is that going to really tell you everything? So I think they're going to pay him the 2.9. Or yeah, again, that's just an estimate that I've seen on SpotTrack for you know, for arbitration numbers. But I'd like to see them pay him that, go into spring training. You can fight for the closer role. I want to see what your makeup is. I want to see where your head is at. Maybe give him the first month of the season. If things are rough and rocky, then at that point, maybe he loses some value, but you trade him. You get him out of there. You get him into a different situation, and then you work on, you know, who else did we see in spring training that's ready to come into you know, the bullpen and kind of strengthen our bullpen a little bit. So
maybe a little bit, I mean, Will Bednar action.
Well, gosh, I mean, if that guy can even turn it around, that's the problem too. He's having a rough go with injuries and everything else too. So
I think they're going to have to put him on the 40, or else they could lose him to Rule 5.
I think so, yeah.
And Carson Ragsdale, I believe, is one of the other ones.
Yeah, he's another one. So,
but I think the idea is they have to believe he's the closer if they're going to pay him, right? Sure. Because if they don't believe, they're not. I don't think they're going to pay close to $3 million for an eighth inning guy.
Right. So, but in that case, then, if you do pay him the $3 million and then you make him the closer, how does Ryan Walker take that? You know, mm-hmm. you had a guy who won the role, basically. Didn't win the role. I mean, he was handed the role, but never gave it up. He took that role and ran with it and did a great job. I think he only had one Rocky outing the entire time he was closing. And then in that situation, do you now have a problem? Because Ryan Walker's like, man, I'm ready to get back into that closer role. But that's good. You want that, I guess.
Yeah.
You want that competition.
You want them to compete.
Yeah, you want them to compete. So you got an eighth inning guy, and if he sees Duvall, and then that way too, Bob Melvin knows as well, hey, if I need to switch it up, I can switch it up. I can absolutely do that. So,
all right, we are going to play a quick game here to end the show. I told you we're going to get out of here a little sooner than later. Our second free agent of Who Do You Want? All right. This isn't going to be as gangbusters as it was during our Adamas versus Kim.
That was a tough one.
Head battle that, tough one. Yeah. That we did. This is going to be a little different. It's going to be we're picking between two first basemen on short contracts. The idea that they would sign a short deal because we have Bryce Eldridge coming up, and we're hopeful that he's going to be the future first baseman. He may need 2 years. He may only need 1 year. Or, as we saw with Damon Minor, he may need all of the years because, you know, these prospects don't always fulfill. Though I would say Bryce Eldridge is a much higher value prospect than Damon Minor was.
Yeah.
Those two players are going to be Christian Walker and Paul Goldschmidt. Now, I think most people would say Christian Walker, hands down. And if you are just saying who's the better player, I think that's an easy, easy one. Christian Walker definitely had the better season last year. We can quickly compare them. Goldschmidt was 22 jacks, 65 RBI, very unlike Goldschmidt on base, slugging also way down. OPS plus was under that 100 mark. For Christian Walker, 26 jacks, 84 RBI, OBP of 335. So not great, but above his career average. Slugging 468, also above his career average at the age of 32, 33. And his OPS 803, OPS plus 121. Goldschmidt is going to be 37 at the start of the season. So he's 4 years older than Christian Walker. Now, so like I said, easy pick here. There is something though, which is Walker's projected contract is 2 for 44. So if you sign Walker, you are signing him with the idea that he's going to play for 2 years and maybe not play first. Maybe he DHs. He doesn't only have to play first base. For Goldschmidt, it is less of an investment. He has him 1 for $15 million. So the average is a little bit higher, but it's because it's only a one-year deal. By the way, Jack Peterson, 1 for $16 million. You could bring good old Jock back. But who do you want? Let's say that those values are real.
Right.
Would you sign Christian Walker at 2 for $44 million with the idea that maybe you don't even need him in that second year? Or do you go for somebody like Goldschmidt and 1 for $15 million?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think my choice is going to be Christian Walker. If you can get him for one, if you could get him for two and you have to move him to DH the second season or move him in the off season. I mean, you could do that as well because he's only got 1 year. What was it? 2 for what?
44.
2 for 44. it's kind of a big contract to move. If he didn't have a great offseason, then you got to move a guy for $22 million. If those were the two offered contracts, I might go with Paul Goldschmidt.
Mm.
And I didn't think, when you said the two names, I thought there's no way in hell I'm going for
Goldschmidt. Yeah, Goldschmidt, you're just like, ugh.
I mean, he's a former Gold Glover, right?
And, I mean, he's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame, or he's going to be, if he has close. Another one or two years, he's going to get over 400 home runs.
Yeah, and so, but again, if you want to hit a lot of home runs to get to that 400 home runs, you're not coming to Oracle Park. You're going back to Arizona.
No, yeah, 100%. You know what's really interesting? Do you know that Goldschmidt won the MVP just 2 years ago?
Was it just 2 years ago? Interesting.
2022, he hit 35 jacks, 115 runs batted in, slugged almost 1,000 in 2022. And he is a runner-up for the MVP two times, all the way back to 2013 when he was with Arizona, and then again in 2015 with Arizona. And then he was third place in MVP in 2017 with Arizona. And he really never, I mean, he had good seasons in St. Louis, but nothing like the 2022 season. And just the last 2 years, he's fallen off fairly dramatically too. I mean, it's not like he still played the same amount of games last year as he did the previous season, but his WAR went from 3.4 to 1.3, and then his OPS plus went from 120 to 98, and that was coming off of a season in which he had a 177 OPS plus while winning the MVP. So I don't know what happened. I mean, it could be just age, 35, 36 year seasons just fell off the radar. The reason I would pick Walker is I think he's probably aging slightly better. He is a little bit younger, and I think his power would hold up a little bit better in our park. But another thing, and this is very interesting, is he also plays Gold Glove defense. So that is an interesting wrinkle to what Buster Posey may want. By the way, Paul Goldschmidt last won his Gold Glove in 2021, so not like he's a poor defender. But right. You kind of wonder about that, and just the idea that if we're looking to make the defense even better. So I don't think there's a winning guess here on our end. I like Walker a little bit better. Goldschmidt, You get worried when you see the production go down as quickly as it has with him, because it could go down to like nothing, right? Next year.
I don't think at first base you're gonna get a guy like Pete Alonso for 1 year. You know what I mean? Because I don't think he has anything to prove. I think Christian Walker absolutely has something to prove. So I think you can get him for 1 year. And you're going to get 1 year for Paul Goldschmidt because it's going to be a, am I going to retire after this year type of contract?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you can talk Christian Walker into a 1 year deal, I am like 80% on that side then.
Or a one and one like they've been doing. Maybe he's got.
Yeah, exactly. And I've always liked Christian Walker. I think he's a fun baseball player. The guy crushes the baseball. I'm just looking. They're both right-handed bats.
Alonso and Christian Walker had almost identical seasons last year. Well, Alonso had a little bit more home runs. Walker's average was a little bit better. Walker's defense is definitely better. So, they were pretty close to competition wise, they're pretty close to the same player. Alonso projected, according to Britain, 5 for 140. So he probably did lose a little bit of value throughout the season.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I think he did. But I also think you look at a guy like that and you stick him in. I mean, Arizona's got a first base position open, and you stick a guy like him at first base in Arizona, he's back to hitting 40 home runs. No problem. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. when you can't say that about the Giants, because nobody outside of Barry Bonds and maybe a little bit of Pablo Sandoval, though, how many home runs did Pablo Sandoval possibly lose playing at Oracle? Belt, and you know, Belt probably is a 30 jack guy, you know, not playing an Oracle. So,
well, that's where the scouting GM comes into play. We got to, we have to draft well.
Yeah.
Because you got to get a Bryce Eldridge. You got to draft a Bryce Eldridge because you're not going to go out and entice, you know, somebody like that to come to your team. Let's say he becomes a 40 home run guy. You're not going to go out and be like, hey, Pete Alonso, come to our ballpark, and instead of hitting 40, hit 32 a year.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a stat I sent you today that Michael Conforto led the National League in road home runs.
Yeah.
Which I would have never guessed that if someone asked me that question. He would have been so far off my radar in answering. But it shows
he hit 17?
17 home runs 17. On the road.
Golly.
Yeah. Which is amazing because it just shows you how hard of a time he had hitting in this park. So
yeah, for sure.
All right. Like we've stated, there will be some weeks that we're just going to take off depending on the news. You know, if Buster drops bombs on us every day like this, then we may have to come back. But if there's reason to come back next week, we'll be back next week. If not, we may skip a week. But we'll try and be back at least every other week. But who knows? The Giants could sign somebody, and we'll come back next week. So just a heads up on that. And I will let you know on some of the other shows that I do with the Death Lineup and We Want Winners when we're going to be back. All right. So for Brad, I am Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
Peace.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping. Stamps.com will simplify your postage needs and add valuable time back into your workday, so you have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off UPS and USPS. Send invoices, checks, certified mail, packages, and anything else you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. If you sell online, connecting with every major marketplace and shopping cart is easy. Plus, you can schedule package pickups through their dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with Stamps.com's Rate Advisor. Add more flexibility to your workday with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.